Hello, West Liberty. This is Haley, and you are listening to WGLZ 91.5 FM. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal. And today, we're doing a little special segment called Academic Affairs, where we get to interview a faculty or staff member of West Liberty to get to know them better. And today, I have the honor of having Professor Evan Robinson here with me. Hello.
Hello.
Now, you are a professor. You are part of the music and theater department here at West Liberty, correct?
Yes.
All right. Do you teach any other? Because I had you for rock appreciation. Are there any other classes that you teach?
I also teach music appreciation, regular music appreciation, and also low brass. So I teach the trombone, euphonium, and tuba when those students are here. And I have about six students right now.
Okay.
Studying those instruments.
Okay. So first and foremost, I wanted to talk about your interest in music and how you got started into teaching music.
Well, I got started with teaching music. I guess I'd not really went into it thinking this would be how it would end up. I originally wanted to be, and still am, a performer. And started when I, if you'd like to be interested in knowing about my career as a performer, that would be how I ended up teaching. Mm-hmm. I actually had started as a trombonist when I was in high school. And unfortunately, due to various reasons that were somewhat beyond my control, but not entirely, I actually gave it up and then became an electric bass player in rock and roll bands.
Oh, okay.
So that's how I know about, have an interest in rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for about 10 years and didn't play the trombone at all, which is what my instrument is now. After about 10 years, I had a bit of an epiphany with my life and decided I wanted to go back to the trombone and took that up very seriously. And then auditioned and got into the Manhattan School of Music. Mm-hmm. As kind of a later than normal undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
And went through there, and then from there went to the University of Georgia for my graduate work.
Okay.
And it was there that I got introduced to the idea of teaching, where as a graduate assistant, I was teaching both low brass lessons and also rock appreciation as well, because there was a teacher there who was one of the pioneers of teaching the mm-hmm. class, and I was very fortunate to be assigned to work with him. And it was there that I kind of combined my love for kind of rock music, but also music history,
mm-hmm.
and seeing how to teach it. So really working with him kind of taught me how to teach the course.
Okay, so you got essentially like a firsthand experience.
Yeah.
You got to learn from the, not, I guess not supposed to be the original, but one of the first.
Yeah, one of the people who pioneered the idea of teaching rock and roll history. And in fact, it was, I remember a particular class where he, usually I would do, we would teach these breakout sections, and, you know, he would teach the main, and the University of Georgia is a much bigger school than here. So
yeah.
Like we would teach we would have a lecture class of like 400, 500 people in this huge hall.
Wow. Okay.
And he would do, you know, one day he came to me and he came and with a whisper in his voice was like, I have laryngitis. I can't teach. You're going to have to do it. And he chose me out of all the other. He had four or five graduate assistants. I was the one he chose to do it. So I had to get up there and without any preparation whatsoever, wing an entire class. And it actually went up pretty well. And I have to admit, it was at that moment that I'm like, I really enjoy this. I like getting up in front of people and talking about a subject that I really love.
Mm. Yeah. So this is, you did this in front of several hundred people?
Probably 400 or 500 people.
Wow. That's, I...
that I got up there and got through it. You know, I mean, he had PowerPoint slides and all that, or I should say acetates that you put onto the overhead projector.
Oh, I remember those. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, you know, I was able to, you know, I knew enough about the subject that mm-hmm. I could certainly extemporaneously talk about it. So
now you also started to talk about how you play a low brass instrument as well as, you said, the bass as well?
The electric bass.
Was there any other instruments that you learned in your seven-decade career?
No, I'm just a low brass, the trombone, and I play some euphonium, which is kind of an associated instrument, and the electric bass, which I actually taught myself.
Can I ask what a euphonium is?
It's a kind of a small tuba,
okay.
Tenor tuba, they would call it.
So. Oh, okay. I've heard like the tenor tuba, yeah. Tenor, like, yeah. Or when they specify.
We also call it the baritone horn.
Okay, yes.
In America, we generally tend to call it the baritone horn.
Now, I saw that you have been part of several orchestras. How many have you performed with in the past?
Well, many as a freelance player, mm-hmm. For sure. I mean, I've played with Wheeling Symphony. I'm not an official member of that organization, but I do play mm-hmm. with them from time to time. And, you know, many other kind of freelance orchestras. I was a full-time member of an orchestra in Mexico, in Querétaro, Mexico, and I was there for a few years, and that was a really amazing experience, just, you know, being in a foreign culture and experiencing that, but also living there at the same time and earning your living doing that. Yeah. It was really, really pretty amazing. I really enjoyed it.
Did you enjoy the views while you're at it?
Oh, yeah. No, it was, Querétaro was a beautiful Spanish colonial city right in the center of Mexico, and it was just absolutely beautiful. I still miss it sometimes.
Now, we talked about how you got into teaching things like rock appreciation. Why did you decide on West Liberty specifically to teach?
Well, this is my wife got the job here. She is the music theory professor.
Oh, okay.
And we, you know, as anything in a marriage, you decide to do everything as a team.
Yeah.
And she got offered this job. It was actually another job she got offered right at the same time. And we looked at the, you know, weighed the pros and cons of each job. And in some ways, the other job might have been a little more prestigious, but we thought West Liberty looked like more like the type of place we wanted to work. Most part of it was there appeared to be opportunities for me to teach here. But also, we both had a commitment to teaching at universities, which maybe weren't that prestigious, where we could work with people, you know, who might not have otherwise been exposed to things that, you know, that perhaps it could have been for whatever reason. And we thought that, you know, we felt like this was a better fit for us as far as the type of students we really wanted to work with.
Now, can I ask who your wife is as well?
Anna Stephan Robinson.
Okay.
And she's the music theory professor in the music program.
I like that you're both in the similar categories.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's how we met. You know, we actually met when I went for a short time before I went to Manhattan School of Music. I went to Queens College for a little while, and she was finishing up her music ed degree there. And we met, and it was just sort of like, you know, the rest was history, as they say.
Do you think that your wife may have also inspired you to get into music education?
Yes, oh, certainly, because that was always certainly her passion was education from a pretty early stage. And I think in some ways, maybe she dragged me a little kicking and screaming into it. I think she was absolutely right, you know, that it's something that I really enjoy really doing, much more than I ever thought I would.
Well, I think you did fantastic when you taught me.
Thank you.
Now, do you have a favorite place you've performed at overall?
I performed at Carnegie Hall. That was pretty nice. That's the great concert hall in New York City, and that's
right, yeah,
where everyone aspires to perform.
That feels like a big dream for most musicians.
Yeah, and that is a big dream. So to actually be able to perform there, and I did it more than once, you know, playing in ensembles, that was always very exciting.
Oh, I'm sure that was really exciting. How many times did you play at Carnegie, might ask?
Maybe four or five times, you know, in various kind of orchestras that were backing up choirs and stuff like that there. So.
Well, that actually sounds really awesome. Yeah. Now, you still perform currently now, correct?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Where do you think people can see you perform?
Well, you could see me, you know, sometimes I play with the Wheeling Symphony. I do play recitals here. I don't have one planned for this semester. Maybe next semester I'll have something going. I have to speak with my colleague, Dr. Lee, and see if he's available to accompany me. He's very busy. I usually try to do recitals and things like that. You know, as far as actually performing in the Wheeling area, there aren't that many opportunities. I do occasionally perform up in Pittsburgh with various ensembles. I just played last year with a Broadway production of The Wiz at the Benenden Center.
Oh, so, that actually sounds very exciting.
Yeah, it was very exciting, especially since they called me at the last minute to fill in for someone, and I had to learn an entire Broadway show in 2 days, which is not an easy thing to do.
No, it is not. That's very impressive. Well, thank you so much so far, Professor Robinson. We're going to take a little break. Okay. And when we come back, we're going to continue academic affairs and talk about Professor Robinson's interest off campus, vintage cars, here on WGLZ 91.5 FM. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal.
Hello, this is Terry Giller, instructor of creative arts therapy, and you're listening to WGLZ 91.5 FM. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal.
Hello, West Liberty. This is Haley, and you're listening to WGLZ. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal. And I'm back here in the studio continuing academic affairs with Professor Evan Robinson. Hello.
Hello.
Now, before the break, we talked about your interest in music and your start into academics. Now, I want to talk about an interest of yours completely different from your job, and that's vintage cars. Oh. Now, how long have you had an interest in vintage cars?
Well, I bought a car with a friend of mine when we were 15 years old, and this is in Long Island in New York. We spent, boy, we bought a 1959 Thunderbird for $100.
Really? Wow.
It's a long time ago.
Sorry.
And we couldn't even drive it because we didn't have driver's license. The person we bought it from drove it back for us and demonstrated how fast it could go by driving 140 miles an hour, which we thought was cool, but probably not wise.
No.
And we proceeded to take it apart in my garage, which much of the consternation of my father, who could no longer park his car in there, and worked on it and restored it to a fair degree, as well as to 15 or 16-year-olds could manage.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, we did sell it. Although I remember years later encountering that car out on the street in New York. You know, I'm from New York City, mm-hmm. in Manhattan, of all places, and I just remember, wow, it's the car I owned. I never did figure out who bought it. But I always had an interest in it. I don't own a vintage car now, but they've always appealed to me. And I've always been really mechanically inclined in general.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I just love things like that.
Do you think it was the mechanical part of vintage cars that really drew you in?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. Also the beauty and the design of it, you know.
Right, yeah.
I mean, you know, cars now don't have the same kind of you know, design aesthetic that they did back then.
I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
So.
And so, of course, I enjoy a lot of that. But I guess a lot of it is, yes, the mechanical part of it really appeals to me. And, you know, I've always been the kind of person who likes to get in and take apart machines. During my time, I was going to Manhattan School of Music, and being as I was a bit older, certainly couldn't rely on my parents to help get me through university. I earned my living as a HVAC technician for the Hard Rock Cafe, air conditioning.
Really?
Well, both general and maintenance engineer and air conditioning engineer, but other things as well for the Hard Rock Cafe in New York City. And I basically ran all sorts of stuff like that using my mostly self-taught mechanical knowledge to get me through that.
That's very impressive, actually. Now, you said you did this with your best friend growing up. Did you share this interest with anybody else as well?
No, you know, it's this particular friend, I have lost contact with him years ago. I still have some very close friends from when I was younger. I don't really have anyone other than that my friends call me and I'm a consultant for them when they have problems with their cars. And I'm usually the first person they call when they ask me, what should I do? The mechanic says this, and I will talk them through it. In fact, I just went through that last week with a friend who had a pretty significant issue, and, you know, we sorted it out.
Yeah. But. Are you that friend that they take you to, like, the car dealership and make sure that the person, like,
yes.
the salesman does not sell you something,
yes.
like, junky?
And again, I did that over the summer with another friend. We went there, and we negotiated and got him a new car and everything like that.
Well, that's a great thing, especially since car salesmen can be very pushy with things.
Yes, they can. So, you know, and you also have to know when, and sometimes get up and just walk away from the deal, which I've done. You know, I remember doing that with a friend, and I just turned to him and said, this deal is over, let's go, and we went.
Yeah,
and
well,
we got him a better car.
That sounds like a great deal on both ends. You get to do your interest, and you also get to help out people.
Yeah,
close to
and
you.
It is really. I do like it. I do love it, and I love that I can help my friends that way, you know, with at least that bit of knowledge that I have.
Now, you said that that first car you got, you worked on it with your friend. Did you work on any other vintage cars outside of that one as well?
Yeah, there was a couple here and there that I had. I had a couple of old Volkswagens. I had this, I remember a couple of old Plymouths and Chryslers that I had, you know, through my time. I was always a big Mopar fan. For those car people out there, you know what that means. So I had some of those. Right at the present, I don't have anything. It's a 20-year-old Subaru, but I don't know if that really counts. That's just something that gets me here and there. So, but the fact that it's 20 years old is because I'm, you know, I know how to maintain them, and I'm going to keep that thing running as long as I can.
So, do you think that the mechanics in both, like, older cars and newer cars, do you think they're similar at all?
Well, there's the basic principles are the same, and at least in an internal combustion engine, but how the engine is controlled and is managed is certainly very different now than in the old days, for sure. So
yeah, well, I don't know much about cars. The most I usually learn is from my stepfather, who loves working on cars like that. Yeah. Specifically, my car, which just so happens to be a Volkswagen CC. Actually,
oh, okay, all right.
It's a very, very fun car. Now, yeah. Do you usually attend like vintage car shows?
Oh yeah, whenever I can go to one, I definitely go.
Because there's definitely several at the Highlands every year.
Yeah, and I always make it a point to go there, and yeah. I look and I'm like, okay, yeah, I need to get another one of these. You know, it's an expensive hobby now, to be honest.
Oh yeah, definitely agree, especially since older parts are usually not as made as much, right?
Yeah, you can get the parts. It's just buying the car. And again, it used to be, you know, back when I first did that, when I was a teenager, I was able to buy a car for, you know, $100. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, that very same car, just even in the kind of relatively rough condition, it would probably cost me $10,000 to $12,000 just in not great shape. So, you know, it's definitely gotten to be more of a popular hobby, but a much more expensive one as well. And it's also, as time goes on, obviously the cars become more and more scarce, so they become more valuable, the ones that are left.
Right, yeah. Now, I feel like this is a personal opinion for you. Do you prefer the newer automatic cars, or would you prefer like the old classic manual cars?
I love manual transmissions. Yeah. I go to Europe a lot of summers. Mm-hmm. Dr. Stefan Robinson's, my in-laws, her family is mostly in Finland.
Oh.
And we go there most summers to visit the family. And when we're there, we rent a car. And we usually, you know, the manual transmissions are much more common in Europe than they are here for a variety of reasons. But I think part of it is tradition there. Mm-hmm. The cars tend to be smaller. Gasoline is a lot more expensive there. And I guess mm-hmm. you can be a little more economical.
Okay.
With a manual transmission, although that's modern automatics, to be honest, really kind of have eliminated that difference. But that tradition is still there in Europe, and I actually find it a lot more fun to drive that way.
Yeah, well, I've seen that before. My stepfather owns a manual Dodge Challenger, I believe.
Okay, yeah.
And he also is that person that believes in like the tradition of it, just the feel of it is better compared to automatic cars.
Yeah, and you have a lot more control over the car, I think, in its driving characteristics. You know, certainly I don't have a manual transmission car now. They're so hard to come by now here. Mm-hmm. But certainly on a slippery winter's day going on Route 88, I would really rather much have a manual transmission.
Really?
than that. It would definitely give you some better control over the car and its drivability in conditions like that.
I didn't even think about how it would affect with like our roads here.
Yeah.
So a manual would be better.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, downshifting and using engine braking rather than the brakes if you're going down a slippery hill or something like that. It's definitely better than trying to use the, just the regular brakes.
All right.
You have a much better chance of sliding into something.
All right. Now, final question. Again, very personal to you. If you could have any vintage car right now, which one would you have?
I'd probably want a 1951 Hudson Hornet.
Oh, okay.
So, they are the coolest cars.
I'm sure. I unfortunately do not know what that looks like.
Yeah, they're rather large, but they just were beautiful, and they were actually in their time for those NASCAR race NASCAR fans. That was the car to beat in the NASCAR era of the early 1950s. Was the Hudson Hornet.
Okay, I didn't know
about
that. Yeah,
Hudson went out of business by the mid-50s, but those Hornets those were the car to beat in NASCAR.
Are they still available?
Oh, no, they went out of business in the mid-50s. I mean, of course, you can find a vintage one.
But, yeah, I was going to say, I was wondering if there's, like, the actual cars, you can find them.
Yeah, you can find, these cars are certainly out there, you know, they're certainly valuable to people who want them, and they're around. You're going to pay a lot of money for one.
Yeah.
but they're out there.
I completely understand that. Well, that concludes it. Thank you so much, Professor Robinson, for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
Thank you for being a part of Academic Affairs. I really enjoyed hearing about your start into the musical career and then teaching here at West Liberty, and then your interests outside of, because I think people forget usually that professors have interests outside of what they actually teach.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we can say for everyone here listening that we are glad to have you here on the Hilltop.
Oh, again, my pleasure.
And to everyone listening here, you have been listening to WGLZ 91.5 FM. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal.